Welcome to another edition of the Mexican Soccer Show. This is an hour-long podcast to talk about all things Mexican football. Clearly, I'm not the usual host. If you can hear me like stumble a little for a second there, I was like, oh, wait, is that usually what Lisa says? Is that not what Lisa usually says? Nonetheless, I'm clearly not Lisa Vasquez. I'm Cesar Hernandez. I'm joined by Adriana. I'm joined by Amy. Adriana, we'll go with you first. How are you doing? How are things out in Mexico City?
I'm great, Cesar. I mean, it's repechaje season, liguilla. Everything's coming to an end slowly. We've got CONCACAF final this week as well. So it's busy. We got the schedule out today. So yeah, lots of stuff going on. Liga MX Femenil also ending. So it's a busy month, busy month.
Yeah, Liga MX Femenil literally happening right now, actually. We have like Chivas versus Rayadas, and then we got Tijuana Juarez later. There's Santos Mazatlán. There's a lot going on, isn't there, Amy? We'll go over to Amy. How are you doing? How are you balancing all these things, including Liga MX Femenil, El Tri?
There's this really cool yoga position called the fetal position. If you just crawl into it and slowly start breaking down for about 10 to 15 minutes, you can go about the rest of your day. It's really, really fun in a keeping yourself distracted kind of way. But also it's like, it also gets you ready, even though it's like in December, like for the World Cup. Like you just see like so much soccer happening and you're just like, oh my god, like we still have the World Cup this year and stuff. So a lot of fun, because I know this past weekend was insane, and we're gonna get into it for the men's, you know, regular season ending. And then the women's side right now, I think Cholos versus Juarez could also determine who takes that final spot in the top eight. So yeah, a lot of fun, good distractions, entertaining always.
Yeah, good to see that there'll be a fun end to Mexico women's soccer there with that Cholos game. But speaking of things that weren't fun, Mexico 0, Guatemala 0. What were your thoughts on that game? Before we started recording, I believe the phrase that you used was that it was a very long night.
It was an extremely long night. There's no way that game lasted 90 minutes. it just felt so much longer.
Did we overhype it? Was that the thing? We were just so excited. We were like, oh, yeah. It was because I felt like it was like 80 to 90% of the players that like people on Twitter were yelling at Tata to call up. He like called them up. And then we were expecting this like new, exciting, fantastic team. And then we were like, oh, wait, these guys haven't trained together that much. They're a bunch of young players. Only like two players had more than like 10 senior national team appearances. Like maybe we should have expected this. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I really dislike it when we have, I'd love to have that team, but in like a FIFA day, like a regular FIFA day where they could actually practice together more than a couple of days and really get to know each other. Because otherwise it's just like this hope for the best panorama where you just like, you have them on the field and they're not really getting to know each other yet and they still struggle. Obviously same thing went on with Guatemala. But who, by the way, I think they had to like sleep in the airport and they had some trouble getting here. And getting to Orlando. But yeah, that was terrible. But I was happy to see other players because we've heard Tata say that he has like 70 or 80% of his squad already determined for Qatar, as Lisa would say. But I mean, I'd really like for other players to step up. However, it doesn't seem as though that was the best chance possible. I really hope that we see some others in Nations League and maybe the next friendlies. But yeah, it just seemed as though it was kind of like a mess, like trying to like get everyone together and somehow hope for the best. And it really didn't turn out well as a fan to see that game. So yeah, it was a 90-minute game that seemed way longer than that.
Yeah, it felt like, I don't know, maybe like, because I was recording with Amy before the game and we're like, oh, it's going to be like a 3-0 win, 4-0 win. And I was, you know, talking about, you know, how, you know, Mexico shouldn't be so afraid of this Guatemala side. And there's all these players have so much to prove. And then, I don't know. For me, it felt like, oddly enough, even though it was an entirely different roster, you had players making their debuts. I think the average age of the starting 11 was 23.5. And even though Tata obviously wasn't there because he can't travel because of his eye procedure, it still, for me, felt like the Mexico that we saw in World Cup qualifying recently. Lots of ball possession, you know, lots of horizontal like passes. They would switch the field, and then the final third, it was just kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Poof is a good way of putting it. I don't know. It just felt it felt a lot like the same old three that we've seen in recent months in World Cup qualifying. I guess that in the end is what was most disappointing for me. But I guess Amy, to you, what were your thoughts in the game? Are we being a little too negative? Should we be more optimistic about the debuts and about some of the new players stepping in? Because in the end, it's a friendly. Maybe the result doesn't matter, and it's just about getting minutes.
I honestly thought that the factors going against Guatemala were going to favor Mexico. I think the positive that you can take out of that friendly, even watching the lack of goals, which they should have scored. I'll start off with that. Like, there should have been goals. I really do think that. I think despite it being a friendly, despite Guatemala kind of, I mean, Guatemala actually came out with a decent fight. So credit to them, even if they were lacking sleep and all that. I will say a positive that I got from this is the players did look hungry on Mexico side. Like, they did, like, yeah, it wasn't working in the final third, which, like you wrote in your article, right, is kind of worrisome because you're like, is this just going to keep happening for the next couple of generations? But there was a hunger in these younger players that, you know, we don't see with the senior side. Like, we hadn't really seen in qualifiers, you know, it was more just like, oh, we'll happen to get into the final third and then we're not going to score. Whereas here, it felt like, just like Guatemala, you know, maybe they were running on like lack of sleep, adrenaline or something came in. I think that Mexico responded really well. The downfall here, though, is that Mexico never responded with a goal. Like, I think they should have. But I did see promise from some of the young players that, you know, it just didn't work out. Like, I think Jimenez is still a good player. I think you saw some, you know, good opportunities from him that just didn't find, the ball just didn't find itself in the back of the net. I think he let himself fall one too many times, maybe two, but I do think that there was still a fire in them that you're like, okay, this is why we get excited about these young players. And, you know, maybe it was just a blah Wednesday night game that, you know, it just didn't work out the way any of us were expecting it to, but that was my positive. It was like, okay, I'm watching them and I don't really know what to expect that much. I know there's a lot of hype around other players over some, but I actually didn't hate what was on the field as opposed to the senior side where it was like, God, why did I just watch 90 minutes of this?
Yeah. And it's like, I guess it's also this realization, just like, this is the most important thing in this situation is that Tata Martino needs to learn lessons. And he's going to have plenty of opportunities over the next several months leading into the World Cup. And there are going to be games like this, where you're going to see some alternate players, you're going to see some young players, you know, given an opportunity to kind of make a name for themselves here. And yes, it might end up being a little difficult to watch, but I guess if we are being optimistic, it's, you know, we did see some debuts, we did see some minutes. And actually, at the very least, I mean, it's not as if all the players were terrible. Like, I liked Alex Zendejas. I thought he was great. Kevin Alvarez, I thought he was great. In the midfield, I thought Luis Chavez and Eric Sanchez were decent, but I thought that there were some positive takeaways there for all three. And at the same time, too, I guess it's I think it's also important to not be too critical of, let's say, someone like a Marcelo Flores, who he was underwhelming for me. If the World Cup was happening tomorrow, would I personally call him up? Probably not. But he still has an immense amount of potential. And also, it's probably a little unfair for me to try to criticize him based off of just 29 minutes. But what did you think? Because at the same time, he did seem a little cautious, though. I don't know. I feel like I wanted a risk taker out there, and that's not what we got. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, like, there's also that to consider. I mean, most of these players had to come back to teams that were fighting for a Liguilla position. So obviously they couldn't risk injuries. They couldn't play 100% as you probably could see if it were like a FIFA day game. I agree. I kind of looking like on the upside of things, I was glad to see really young players, because one of the things I've been really worried about regarding Tata is just how little we've seen of a process, just not ending with Qatar, but actually going to the 2026 World Cup. We haven't seen a really long-term project. And usually for most of our coaches, it ends with one World Cup and then we have to start all over again. Hopefully that won't be the case. I know many of us have not been entirely happy with that these past couple of months and with the qualifiers, but hopefully we will have a long-term process. And just looking at some of these players, I do think that they're probably going to start off 2023 as the potential player to be called up like for the next 4 years and looking into the next World Cup. So for instance, Acevedo, I really hope he does go as a third goalkeeper. I really don't understand why he hasn't been called up a lot more with the seniors, with the senior side, considering this to be more like a U23 side. I really think that you need a younger third goalkeeper for Qatar. But yeah, totally agree with Angulo. Aguirre, I think was pretty good. I was surprised to see Córdoba. I don't think he's up to the level we saw in the Olympics. I hope he is sometime soon. I think he's done a little bit better with Tigres, but it's definitely not the best Córdoba we've seen in a while. I agree with Sendejas. I actually think he could start competing with the senior squad if he keeps it up. I know Jimenez, Chaquito, he's going to have he could step up maybe just because we've been struggling so much with that striker position. We haven't seen Jimenez do well. We haven't seen Chucky do well. Tecatito is doing okay, but he's not like your number nine striker usually. Yeah. So yeah, I do think we have a spot there that has to be filled. It might be Chaquito. I do think he's probably not in that position yet career-wise, but he could be. I mean, you don't know. Like, you still have like a really good 4 months, I think, to convince that to take you on that squad. So yeah, let's just see. Alvarado, who was usually called up for the senior team as well, we kind of haven't seen as much. Probably could have another go at, with the senior side. So it just depends on seeing those players make the best of these opportunities, see how they do in Liguilla, obviously avoid any injuries. We just might see them, you know, for Nations League next month.
Amy, your thoughts on who stood out, you know, any other takeaways from this game? Because I guess, I mean, really quickly, I mean, for me, like if we're talking about, you know, some of the players who stood out, I feel like they moved a little bit up the depth chart. But I think if I was a starter, like a current starter for all three, you know, from like the actual senior starting 11, I feel like I wouldn't be too worried about losing my spot. If I was one of those like starting players for L3. Oh, Amy, she there? I think she might be gone.
Well, I wouldn't be worried.
You cut me off. What was the question? I'm sorry.
No,
all worried. As a senior team member.
If you're a senior national team player, would you be worried after watching that performance? Because I feel like I feel like a player, like let's say. I don't know, but yeah.
I don't think Montes is worried about like Angulo or something, you know, or Moreno. And it's not because they're doing fantastic either. I mean, let's be honest. We could improve a lot with the senior team side in several positions, but definitely this side just wasn't as spectacular as you would have hoped for a team or for players that should have taken advantage of this opportunity.
I think that in the system that is played in, no, you shouldn't be worried. I think in a long-term kind of like different system, I think you could be worried. But then the question also becomes, what's the longevity of the current senior players? You know what I mean? Like in terms of this World Cup, no, you shouldn't be worried. But are you really thinking of the next World Cup on your end? Or, I mean, I know some of the players are not super old, so I don't want to put it in that sense either, but I think that there is a natural flow of transitions that I don't think you'd be worried right now. But I think if you look at, I don't know, is that going to stay for the next World Cup? Probably not. You know, you might get worried. You might get worried in terms of the potential that these players have. And, you know, if you've been comfortable in your spot, but you've not aimed to improve yourself, then I think the worry is there more on the long term. But yeah, I think if your question is just for the World Cup, probably not.
Yeah, I think more than likely, if you're a starter, you probably
Let me turn around the question. Who you want to be worried? Like, who do you say I really want this player to make things complicated for Tata?
I want Santi Jimenez to make things complicated for Tata. I want Acevedo to make things complicated for Tata.
That would mean that you would want actually that's wrong of me to say, because I was gonna say, but then that means that you want Ochoa to not be the starting keeper.
It's the assumption that I know Ochoa, and actually I hope that Ochoa is gonna start in every single World Cup game. But I think putting pressure on Tata for the number three position.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe some, okay, some fullback players too.
I would argue I would even argue that he already kind of puts pressure on him. You know what I mean? Like, like, I think there's just like Adriana started the conversation. Like, I think you see these performances from Acevedo and you're like, why isn't he, you know? So I don't even on a national team level, I don't think the time that he's played, he's ever been like, oh, why were people thinking of putting him in a third place position? Like, I think he's I think he consistently kind of proves that point. So I agree with your sentiment. Yeah. I just think it's already there too.
You know who I would like to see like in really top level and complicate things a bit? Eric Lira.
That
would be good. Yeah.
I was wondering too, do you think, because there are certain players who weren't called up where you're wondering, it's like, were they not called up because Tata isn't considering them? Like certain fringe Liga MX players are like, or did he not call them up because he's already seen how he plays and he's going to be back in the national? That's I wonder if that's the situation with Eric Lira, where it's just like, maybe he is actually in the picture now for all three and thought that was like, no, it's fine. I would rather see Eric Sanchez. He's like, I'd rather give an opportunity to Eric Sanchez or Luis Chavez, which it surprised me that he hasn't. That was his L3 debut. I was like, oh, really? I feel like he's had some sort of debut before, but maybe that's what I'm thinking with Eric Lira, is I think that he is in the picture, and I do actually want to see him get more minutes and get an opportunity for L3. But I wonder if that's one of those players that's just like, it's not like Vigón, who looks like he's probably not in the picture for L3. But maybe Lira, he is kind of in the picture, but thought that was given an opportunity to other players. That's what I might be wrong.
That's what I mean with like the current system. Tata has it the way he has it. And like, you know, like the way he sees that picture is only the way he sees the picture. I don't think that anybody's going to invade it. Maybe as a secondary option, he'll be like, you know what? It would benefit us if we called up this player to have, you know, on the off chance our starter gets injured during the tournament or something like that. But I think the way that Tata has just been the last, like, couple of months during qualifiers and everything, I don't think he's moving parts too many.
I agree.
Is either comforting or depressing.
Or totally worrisome.
All right. Any other final thoughts on L3 before we move on to the Liga MX playoffs?
No, it's going to be interesting. I was thinking about this. It's really mean, though. You know, when the Panini album comes out and you're looking at players and you see who actually didn't make it on the squad?
Yeah, that's always awkward. Can't they just
It's always awkward. I was thinking about that. I was like, who's going to be like, you know, the NFL draft has Mr. Irrelevant and it's like the last pick. I'm like, who's going to be like the Mr. Irrelevant of the Panini album that didn't make it on the squad?
It's going to be, okay, early.
It's going to be like Chicharito.
Even Panini should know he's not good. I'm gonna say it's one of the goalkeepers.
Chicharito Panini is gonna be like getting Mew in Pokemon Snap. Like, you're gonna grab it and you'll be so happy that you have that sticker.
So I can totally see people like getting like last World Cup stickers and putting them on the car
in Photoshop.
Yeah, hey,
are you saying that's the issue that with Chicharito? We've been trying to like. Is that like we actually just need apples? Because that's the way you have to hit Mew three times. You break down the shield.
Okay, but then... how long is it? Okay, we're gonna slightly digress. I don't give a crap. We're gonna slightly digress on this point. How long does it take you to gain the strength to be able to get the apples and then throw them? It takes you a little while before you get to that level. You have to get Don't you have to get what's his name? Like, you have to take a picture of somebody to get the apples, and then that way you can.
Well, the apples you get early on. You get the apples early on, right? And then you go.
You also need to be able to slow down the cart to be able to throw the apple at you.
I'm gonna be like such a millennial against you guys. But what game are we talking about? I understand.
Pokemon Snap.
I got Pokemon. For people that don't live in Mexico, we had tazos. Do you know what tazos are? They're awesome.
It's like pugs, little discs. Right?
Yeah, like pugs. Yeah, exactly. But we had the entire Pokemon collection. I have all 120 original ones. I'm going to post a picture on my social media.
Oh my God, never sell
them. And then they had the new ones. So I'm totally with the Pokemon thing, but I have no idea what the game is this time.
So
I had the Game Boy one. You had the blue one and the red one and stuff like that.
Okay. So for anybody who doesn't know this, Adriana is prehistoric when it comes to her video game consoles.
Yeah.
But in the best way possible.
I can't see my Nintendo 64 from where I'm standing. Okay. And it's right next to my NES, you know, like the small one that has
the games. It's a little disappointing on that because I know you have an N64 and you're really good at all the games. I know you are, even though I've never seen you play. So N64, there is a game called Pokemon Snap where you are a photographer
taking
pictures of Pokemon.
I only have Pokemon Stadium.
The original. The original came, Instagram, if you will.
It came out close to the time when Pokemon Stadium was. It was like Pokemon Stadium, and then Pokemon Snap was like a couple years after. Yeah. But I guess we should probably move on to the League of Mikey's playoffs.
Okay, hold on.
Also, I realize we have to pause too because we're being in meeting time. Yeah,
we're right at time. Okay, hold on. Let me. I'll start another call. Give me a second.
All right. I think that's probably enough Pokemon talk. We may or may not
highly disagree. There's never too much Pokemon.
We may or may not have had a little bit of a break there and like actually talk more Pokemon, and then I showed off my Pokemon cards. But anyways, League of Mikey's playoffs. We now have the top 12 set. So the top four: number one, Pachuca; number two, Tigres; number three, Atlas; number four, Club America. They're automatically going through to the quarterfinals. And then this week we're gonna have a play-in round, a preliminary. I call it the wild card round. My editors are telling me to call it the play-in round, but I guess what most people call it is the repechaje. So you have number 8 Cruz Azul taking on number 9 Necaxa, number 7 Monterrey taking on number 10 San Luis, number 5 Puebla taking on number 12 Mazatlan, number 6 Chivas taking on number 11 Pumas. Adriana, your immediate thoughts on it could be on the top 4, it could be on the upcoming wild card. I'm gonna call it wild card now. Wild card games this upcoming weekend. It's a little bit of a good balance here between all the teams in the top 12. I'm liking it.
Well, first of all, I mean, just to point out like what we've spoken since pandemic started, and they came up with the repechaje again, is the fact that you have a league where 12 teams qualify out of 18. So yeah. putting that aside. there are so many things like going on the weekend. It always happens on usually on week 17 because you have several teams already qualified, not necessarily know what position they're going to end up in. But so we had America finally make it as fourth place. It's just amazing that this team was last at some point and they managed to qualify automatically to the quarterfinals. So for anyone who needs a recap, first four teams make it directly to the quarterfinals, and then 5th through 12th. They face each other in the play-in or wild card round or whatever. And then four teams out of that go to the quarterfinals with the first four teams that made it directly. So it's weird though, because sometimes even the first four teams, despite the fact that they qualified automatically the quarterfinals, they have like 10 days off. And usually that's not a good thing. Usually they do quite poorly when they just have that huge break. I mean, they try to get friendlies, but it's not the same thing. We usually see it with second division league, with Expansión. They had this system where the first place team actually made it to semifinals, and it was just worse off. They'd rather play because they just lost so much rhythm and just like competitive level. So now it happens with Liga MX, not to semifinals, but to quarterfinals, and they have to stop for at least 10 days because quarterfinal games will be next Wednesday and Thursday. You get some players back from injury, you get some rest, but sometimes it's not such a good thing. So yeah, I mean, I was amazed to see America make it through directly to quarterfinals. I thought they'd make it through, but honestly, to repechaje. We have Chivas Pumas, high rivalry game, really great to see, but Pumas will come back after playing the CONCACAF final, so God knows how they'll be physically. They did ask for that game to be on a Sunday, so they'll have just as much time as they can get to rest and try to prepare for that game. And yeah, I mean, on the other hand, we also had the teams that are going to get this this fine for ending up last, next to last, and then 16th place out of 18 in the tabla del descenso, what used to be the relegation, which now doesn't exist. But the last three teams after the soccer year, they get a fine. So you do poorly and you still get a fine, so you do even worse, you know. So we had Juarez, Cholos, and Toluca end up last. So they're going to get it's an 80 million peso fine, and then it's a 43 and 37, I think, something like that.
Yeah, I think with the conversion rate, it's like basically it's Juarez are getting around $3.5 million US, mm-hmm. Tijuana around $2.2 million US, and then Toluca around $1.6 million US, which is that's a decent amount of money right there. That's like especially for Liga MX teams. When you think about for many of these Liga MX teams, I think it was I forget who it was who did a report. And that showed that like a lot of these Liga MX teams, they're still really highly dependent on ticket sales. And a lot of these tickets, they haven't fully gone back up to the pre-pandemic levels. You know, like you are seeing more fans at stands and whatnot, but it still hasn't reached that level just yet. So for a team like Juarez, who really, really struggled, this season to have that 3.5 million, you know, for Xolos, who nearly had to, if I remember correctly, they almost had to pay another fee because of Querétaro. We're going to be within the bottom three, and then but they avoided, and then also Toluca as well. You know, it's that last game
against Leon, that was crazy because that game was just definitive for like to know if it was either Toluca or Querétaro who's going to end up last, and it ended up being Toluca amazingly. Querétaro also has like the fine to pay for all the violence that went on in March, but. It was just crazy because they scored so many goals. It was just like, okay, they're going to pay a fine. Oh no, no, they're not. Now they're ahead. No fine. Yes, fine. No fine. I don't know if it's fair or not, because usually like you want the worst teams to do better. And just by taking away what could be a really significant amount of money, especially for teams that, they depend a lot on ticket sales and stuff like that. Probably don't have the biggest TV rights contracts. I don't know if it's the best way to make sure that they do well next year just by frightening and making sure that they don't have that much money to build up their team, get better contracts. Juarez had Tuca. I'm pretty sure that contract isn't really cheap at all. And now you also have to worry about paying that fine, which also has like a time limit and stuff like that. You obviously can't start off next season with having like a debt. And so it's complicated. I mean, because also that money is intended for the expansion, and just to make sure that those teams benefit from some kind of income. But still, I'm not entirely sure if it's the best way to make sure that the league as a whole grows.
Did you know? I feel like I haven't seen. I mean, I know we should probably talk about the playoffs, but really quickly, Adrian, have you seen anything about how exactly they distribute the money? Because I feel like we know that they distribute the money to the or they're supposed to distribute the money to the expansion, but I've wondered how they do that. Because I feel like I haven't read anything, and maybe it's somewhere in the rule book that I just like overlooked. But I feel like I haven't seen anything regarding how they actually distribute.
I think you're right. I haven't seen anything. We're gonna give 50% for this, 20% for that, and it goes this way. No, I don't think I've seen that either. We just hope that it goes on, that it really is happening that way. But it would be interesting to see that, because again, so many expansion teams depend on some sort of like economic push to make it through, and it's been so difficult for them as well because there's now all these rules for them to actually be able to seek promotion.
To be eligible.
Not even to get it, just to be eligible. And it's really difficult. I mean, you've got stadium size, you need parking lots, you need obviously lots of financial stability, you're gonna have a women's team. They probably depend on that money a lot, but agreed. I don't think we've entirely seen all the process of this goes here and look, this came out of it. No, I don't think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we should probably focus back on the playoffs though, because that is what's about to happen. Amy, I'm going to go to you. Looking at Saturday and Sunday's games, these are the games that are coming up. We have Cruz Azul Necaxa, Monterrey San Luis, Puebla versus Mazatlán, Chivas versus Pumas. Do you see a surprise result from any of these? Do you think it's going to be the higher seeds that go through here? I don't know, what comes to mind when you're looking at these weekend games? I could read them off. I'm not even sure if you're looking at them right now, and if I just immediately put you in a tough position here.
The first thing that comes to mind, and I said this when we weren't recording, then I want to say this while we're on the air officially. So I said, I owe you a sincere apology. Because about 3 to 4 weeks ago, I don't know when anymore, you came on the Mexican soccer show And you were like, you know what, Amy? I think America's going to make it to the top four. And I laughed at you so badly. And these men, for whatever shape, way, or form, by divine stars aligning, did in fact make it to the top. So the thing that stands out to me the most is that America is not even in the repechaje. They've qualified automatically to Liguilla. It is just absolutely insane. But actually looking at the games, I would say, we can actually answer a question that somebody gave to us Twitter account.
Forgot about those questions.
From the Mexican Soccer Show. Who was it? Let me look this up real quickly. Blah, 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 blah. Give me 1 second. Our good friend, Daniel Cervantes at Danny_CO19 said, who do each of you believe is a dark horse for the Liguilla? So I would assume the repechaje has a huge part to do with that.
Yeah.
And given the circumstances, I would say is it wrong to say Chivas is a dark horse in this?
I don't know, maybe not
for the repechaje, because they have a higher seed than Pumas.
They've been doing well.
Technically they shouldn't be the dark horse, but maybe for the next stage.
Because I would even argue that like America could be a dark horse, not because of their like stature, but just because they were so far down the standings at this point.
Chivas was in
kind of an equal predicament. I mean, they were kind of up and down the whole season. But I mean, Puebla's not losing to Mazatlán. If they do, then that becomes a dark horse situation, right? Puebla's not beating Mazatlán.
I think maybe you could actually consider, because he's asking not just for the repechaje, but just for the Liguilla. So overall, in the entire Liguilla, like a team that can make a deep run. I think that's fair to say Chivas, because they weren't nearly as bad as América, but they were definitely struggling. Let's not pretend as if they were doing well earlier this season.
I mean, to answer your question too, what stands out to me, I do think that Chivas and Pumas is going to be a fairly interesting one.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Especially since with Chivas, like once again, it's the same situation with America. It's like you have interim managers stepping in for these massive Liga MX sides, and you have Cadena, or as they call him over at the Chivas del Norte pod. Ricky Chain. Actually, another couple of, it was like Ricky, like you're part of the Ricky Chain gang as well.
It's just ridiculous.
But anyway,
have you heard the one from Lozano? That one's really good. The Lamborghini.
Oh yeah, I've heard that one. Yeah. I don't want to start rumors, but didn't his wife start that hashtag, or has she amplify it?
I didn't know that the wife even tweeted out. I just heard it because you know how you have like the Javi Neta for Javi at Barcelona.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, someone thought it's a good one though. I like the Lamborghini. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it feel like Latica Boys. I mean, that's a good one, but Lamborghini, that is a fantastic one. but I guess Chivas Pumas, that definitely stands out. Yeah. Like, Cadena, he's been doing, excellent work with Chivas, and you gotta give him credit for reviving this team. Once again, it feels almost very, very similar to what's happening with America, where you have these interim managers. It's almost like an absolutely like perfect run. And once again, I say this every single season, but I feel like Liguilla it's all about momentum because of the parity in Liga MX. I mean, because I think, I don't know, I'm looking at the table here. Outside of Pachuca and Tigres, I feel like there isn't much,
30 points.
Yeah, and I feel like there really isn't much of a difference between number three through, I'll stop at number nine, maybe 10. I'm not entirely sure, but there isn't that big of a difference between
these
sides. Exactly. So I think that when you have the momentum that you're seeing with Chivas, and maybe the momentum will be lost a little bit with América, but I feel like that's really, really huge. And I feel like, if Chivas can get a win here against Pumas, who are in a really, really busy schedule. They played yesterday. They're going to play on Wednesday. They're going to play again on Sunday. All three very big games. Then, I am really curious to see how far Chivas go through in the playoffs, because I don't know. I'm suddenly very convinced by them.
I was also thinking about how many clubs actually made it through Liguilla after switching coaches halfway through the season. Because we definitely saw huge like differences with Chivas. We saw huge differences with America. Monterrey did that as well. I think Atlético de San Luis did it. Mazatlán. I think it's almost half. It's close to half. And that's pretty impressive. I mean, yeah, disregarding maybe the fact it also that seems 12 like teams more. Make it through. But
that's what I was going to say. Maybe it seems like more because 12 teams are through.
Yeah. But still, I mean, just like you were saying, if you only considered the momentum, Chivas is an entirely different team. América is an entirely different team. And I think they're probably the most impressive, just not only because of the results, but also because of how they play now. I'm actually looking at how many switch coaches. Six of them did. América, Chivas, Monterrey, Necaxa, San Luis, and Mazatlán.
Only six?
Only six, yeah. Only six. They're usually there's like these seasons. It's like a thing that goes on every, I don't know, four or five tournaments where like 16 teams will switch coaches throughout the season.
This is actually a very stupid segue, but Adriana, I am into F1 now. So you and I have something else to talk about.
Yay.
Stuff, right? But my joke now for nobody except for me and Adriano now basically is that F1 switches like drivers and their teams to the rate that like Lionel switches managers. Like it's ridiculous.
They do. Yeah, it is. Like, it's like the same pool.
I'm only 1.5 seasons into the Netflix documentary, but the rate at which they switch players, like it's like high school all over again. Like people are just switching, going from team to team. Like it's just, it's just ridiculous.
It's pretty much Liga MX coaches for you. Yeah, there you go. it's really rare to get like that new guy to come in. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. Maybe you'll see one like go away and then come back as well. You'll have something like that. Like Diego Coca left and then he came back. Like he was champion with Atlas. So Larcamón came in, probably staying, good things, you know, but then you have like, then you have someone like Vucetich who's never like actually left.
I would like the job security of Vucetich. Like that just seems like it just seems very comfortable.
Well, actually, Duca hasn't like been jobless for my god, 30 years.
That's the thing. It's like he's never fired. Yeah. He quits or there's something that happens like in the off season, but it's never the middle of the season with Duca, right?
Yeah, and it's usually really rare for him to quit. I've heard, and this is more of a rumor, that his contracts are like really, really good contracts. And not only in the sense of how much money he makes, but of how they're written and how they have like these blocks. I mean, you just can't end it. It's worse off if you actually want to fire him. But I think that's what's going on with Juarez right now. They actually want him to stay because they could extend his contract, but he doesnn't seem that into it after. I mean, who's to blame, right? They had a terrible season. So I think that's what's going on. I was actually thinking if he doesn't find a club in the off season, this will actually be the end of those 30 something years that we've had Tuca just permanently be in the league somehow.
It's really interesting. If only it was just a little bit better for him in the regular season, because that was absolutely.
I'm just saying,
awful.
Several of these teams are going to need new coaches as well. I mean, I don't know if America is going to keep Ortiz. Not that they're going to get Duca, but I don't think Cadena is going to stay at Chivas. I mean, maybe they could. They've done weird things before, to say the least. I don't think Pumas will, to be honest. I think they're so happy with Lilini.
That's currently the rumor, right? Is that they're trying to work on a contract with extending the contract with him, and then after that they gotta deal with they gotta deal with a lot of their player contracts well that are ending later this year and also like this summer as well. So it'll be interesting what the impact of the playoffs and also CCL has on some of those.
Yeah, Talavera is set to decide depending on whether or not they'll play the Club World Cup. So he'll know on Thursday how that's going. And they say that Chivas couldn't be far off because Chivas is losing one of his goalkeepers. And it's not a position they're struggling enormously but it definitely wouldn't, like, it couldn't, have, like, yeah. You could have Talavera in there and just bring him into the mix and benefit from it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so really quickly, just to wrap up this Liga MX section, I want each of you to choose who's going to win this weekend. So we'll start with Cruz Azul Necaxa. Adriana, who's going to win?
Oh, God. I think that's the toughest one. I'm gonna really like go on like on a limb here. I'm actually gonna say Necaxa.
Okay.
I just think Cruz Azul is mentally in a terrible place. Like the club is like they're like worn off, not doing well as a company. They've had so many issues like outside of the club with the Cementera. I just think it's really distracting. Reynoso has, despite the fact that he won the title, it doesn't seem as though he's really happy with the club either. So, yeah, I think Necaxa could really benefit from that. And again, here's Cesar's momentum again. I think Necaxa is coming in a bit stronger to the Liguilla.
Rodrigo Aguirre, he can single-handedly carry the team with his goals. Luis Malagón, he's not bad in that either. So I don't think it's a bad shot. Amy, what do you think?
Well, I was originally going to say Cruz Azul because the Antuna nation would prefer it in a sense. But I did forget for a quick second about Lozano and just, the momentum. And just honestly, from a personal standpoint, I really enjoy the guy. He's part of the autism community. So there's a little bit of bias there too. So I don't know. I would like to see that trajectory of like what they can potentially do, you know, in a Liguilla sort of thing. But Cruz Azul has quality players. So, I think despite all that, everything I just said, I think I would go with Cruz Azul.
What about, okay, so now let's move on to the other Saturday game, Rayados versus San Luis. I'm going to go ahead and say that the big surprise of the weekend is San Luis.
I agree. Getting the win. I would say the same thing.
I think they're really a very, very, whenever I'm watching them, I feel like I'm like, it's two moods. It's like, oh, you know what? Maybe there's something special here about them. Or the other mood is just like, man, they're just falling apart. This is not a playoff team at all whatsoever. But sometimes when they get good performances of like Berterame and like Ruben Sambuesa, John Murillo and Barovero, like when all those guys click, like they're able to like really make something happen. I know they're in 10th place and it's not, if this was a traditional Liga MX season, that would not be a playoff team. But at the same time, I'm still not fully convinced by Rayados. I know it looked like they woke up and in that last game of the season and Vincent Janssen like scored his first goal of the year. And they've got, what I think it was like 26 shots against Xolos. But then again, it's a really, really bad, awful Xolos team for this season. So I'm going with the San Luis with the surprise results.
I would say San Luis too, for the reason that Adriana said Necaxa. I think the mental hurdles of what Rayados has been facing, they might not be able to do it in one single elimination game. It might come back to bite them. And just like you said, Cesar, Ruben Sambuesa. So I'm going to go. Yeah, I also go with Sambuesa.
Usually I'd lean towards Monterrey just because of the squad, but they have so many players that are just questionable because of injuries and stuff like that. I think they could struggle. But again, they'll be the home team, so maybe take that into consideration. Oh man, it just might be San Luis, like you guys are saying. Yeah, let's go with San Luis.
Ooh,
momentum.
Okay.
Here we go. Yeah, let's go. Momentum.
All right. So if we're sticking with that theme, Puebla have what, 3 losses in a row? We're moving on to Sunday's games. Number 5 Puebla versus number 12 Mazatlan. There's no way that Puebla loses, right? Right?
Yeah, I don't think.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
we're talking about momentum there. They have no momentum, but there's no way.
Like, right? The boys, you know,
Mazatlan has like no momentum either, though. Really,
they have some. They've got
Their last 3 game sets?
They have 4 wins. They beat Puebla. They beat Juarez. They beat Santos. They beat Santos. They got a win over Atlas. That's okay. But at the same time, I'm still not convinced by Mazatlan either. I don't know. But yeah, I think. I might have cut off Adriana there. I'm sorry, but yeah, this is going to be easy. I think this will be an easy win for Puebla. I think they're going to wake up.
I don't know if it's going to be easy, but I do think they'll make a throw.
Okay, Amy.
Yeah.
Amy, you rooting for the Pirates? You rooting for Puebla? in the LOL social media derby between Puebla and Mazatlan, who are you going here for, Amy? Because I think it's got to be Puebla who got the win here. Oh no, she does not want to give us an
answer. She's still thinking.
She is still thinking. But I think with Puebla, it's I think they must be the most like after all the results from the recent weekend and all the results in recent weeks, they must be the most furious Liga MX team right now. They needed just 1 point from their last three games. They just needed 1 point to prove me wrong and push América out of the top four. And then Amy would have been like, Globe América are a top four side. But I think there's almost a benefit for them to face, almost like getting that loss out of the way against Mazatlan. And then now they get to host them. And I feel like there was a little bit of, energy lost there from Larcamón recently with Bubba, but I feel like this is definitely their opportunity to get the revenge and to really get going again. And I could see them as, I'm not gonna say they're gonna be champions, but I could see them as a potential semifinal team, but I think it's got to be Puebla here.
I think it's just one of those teams that has to somehow take advantage of actually playing the repechaje and kind of like go back to basics, you know, go back to what made that team such a strong contender at the beginning of the season. Try to forget the tough spot you were in the last couple of weeks. But definitely, I mean, I think the talent is there. It's just a matter of regrouping and taking advantage of, you're going to face the weakest rival in the repechaje as a home team. So I think you have everything you need to actually make it through and then just like come off of that really tough spot and kind of convince yourself that you do have what it takes to make it difficult for the other teams in the Liguilla.
I think if Amy is back, she'd give us her thoughts on Puebla versus Mazatlan. And if not, then...
I am back. Sorry.
Okay.
Jack wanted some milk. I just don't see it with Mazatlan. I know you gave me some decent momentum there. But I see Puebla winning it. I don't see... Although, if Mazatlan does win, my dedication to Mazatlan will reemerge once again. And I will... fully believe they're capable of winning. But.
All right, let's see if those Pirates can pull it off. And then, of course, moving on to Chivas versus Pumas. That's got to be the game of the weekend, at least for me. That's just such a fantastic one right there. Amy, your thoughts on this one? I think it could go either way. I think this might be the toughest one to predict because we'll see what happens on Wednesday. Obviously, that could be a huge factor for what happens. But I'm going to go just for the sake of just, you know, soccer romance and whatnot. I like the idea of Pumas somehow getting the win on Wednesday and carrying that momentum through Sunday and also defeating Chivas.
I agree with that sentiment. I feel the exact same way. Although... then it's not even a counter argument. What would I prefer, that they win and then they lose, or that they lose and then they win, or do they win both, or do they win neither, which would suck? You know, if it feels like that little matrix that we do sometimes, like what would be a good scenario for them? But no, let me ask you this.
If Pumas wins on Wednesday, what do you think will happen on Sunday?
I think... well, because see, that question becomes like, as Pumas, what are you looking at this week? Obviously, Wednesday, right? That's like top priority. I don't think you're going, let's focus on the repechaje. No, I think you're looking to win that title. So do you care that much anymore about the repechaje?
You'll play like, not like carefree, but it's like, if you don't make it through, that's okay. You won the CONCACAF. You're going to play the Club World Cup, so whatever.
I don't know. I think I'm going to go with I don't know. I actually do have a really like soft spot for Pumas now in the last like 2.5 seasons. I don't know why. Like, I actually don't mind the way they play. I think it was just hilarious how they ended up. What did they beat? Did they come back and beat Cruz Azul and then just kept going? And then just wouldn't stop. Yeah, so I have like a soft spot for them.
No, that's not a Pumas thing. It's a Cruz Azul thing.
Maybe I just enjoy seeing Cruz Azul suffer. But I don't know. I think I could see them win Wednesday and then win on Sunday. I think I could see that happening. I want to see that happen, but then one or the other doesn't, like, I don't mind it.
So you say that out of like the top 8 teams that play repechaje, only the first one makes it through, like out of the top 4 teams, only one, like the other ones, the other 3 teams will be like bottom half.
Why? Because I chose Necaxa, San Luis, and Puebla.
Yeah. I haven't been keeping track with anybody.
Yeah, you like I would, you, would, you would have three like yeah. Like underdogs.
So. We've seen I think that we've seen more ridiculous things in Liga MX.
Oh, we have definitely seen more ridiculous. So, like,
I don't think that and I think there
we've seen the bottom four go through. Yeah, that's happened amazingly enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I could see that. I think I could see that happening. I don't know. Not just because of Adriana, but also because of like the Chivas del Norte people. Like, I don't not want to see Chivas win, but I also like don't want to see them win.
It's a good story. It's okay. I think it is. It's like, it's definitely something like really, really exciting. You see how like passionate like Lilini is on the sideline. It's just like, and also we have about like 6 minutes left here. So I guess we'll probably wrap this up and also really quickly talk about the CCL. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Amy.
No, I was just going to say, well, yeah, we can start transitioning over to CCL. Cause I go, even if they lose a CCL, like I wouldn't consider it a failure.
Yeah. I think they're not going to win this Wednesday. I think Seattle are going to win. I mean, the thing is like Seattle.
How dare you?
I think this is probably the most difficult position a Liga MX team has been in for a CONCACAF final.
Yeah.
And I really think, sadly enough, that Seattle will win. I mean, sadly enough for Liga MX, I actually like Seattle. But like looking for the Liga MX side, which has been really controversial. People are getting really angry that you support the Liga MX team, even though it's not yours.
they're getting mad on both sides.
They're getting mad. I'm like, dude,
it's the same thing in MLS.
It's like the US-Mexico rivalry, like just club level. It's like the same thing. So yeah, I think Seattle will win. I think like the thing with Pumas is it's just a team that's been so like it's done really great for a team that has almost zero investment in really like top players. I mean, they'll get like one every off season, and it's really and it usually means that they sold off another one. Like you sold Cabecita, Carlos González, and then you brought on like Dineno or something, right? So. Yeah, you usually don't have like two really good players just because you probably have to sell one to get the other. So despite that, I think Pumas has done a really great job with young players and just somehow making it through. But I think it's getting to a point where injuries are being an issue. You don't know if Mosso's going to play. If he does play, he's probably not going to play on the Sunday because I'm pretty sure he's going to like injure himself again or something. I hope not, but it seems like at that point where you could play, but you're probably going to need like another 2 weeks to just come back. So yeah. I think Chivas will take advantage of that and they'll struggle, but I think Chivas could make it through. And I'm not saying this as a Chivas fan. I really do think that Pumas' schedule will kind of be in the way.
Yeah, no, and we'll see for Wednesday too, because I mean, it just seems like the stars are aligning for Seattle. It's just like, I'm pretty sure, unless if I missed this, they didn't have an MLS game to worry about over the weekend. They have Raul Ruiz Diaz, Nico Lodero, Christian Roldan, the other Roldan, Jordan Morris, Nuhu. I mean, and it's, And I think it'll be good too. I mean, we've talked about here in the past, but just like it's good for the competition for MLS to finally win it. And I think that take this
and with a team that actually could do something in the Club World Cup.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think it'll be good to put pressure on Liga MX teams. And it was only a matter of time for it to happen. I mean, it is still incredible, you know, that Liga MX sides have gone 13 consecutive seasons with a CCL title. And that goes back to 16 consecutive titles when you count the Champions Cup era. And like Adriana said, we got to see where the injuries are at with, you know, Dineno. Is he 100%? Yes, he got minutes, but is he still 100%? We don't know. Alan Mosso, I mean, yeah, maybe he could play. I mean, I'm curious to see what they say during the media day tomorrow. But that being said, there's still the Lilini X factor. And that's just what's so fascinating. It's like, because there have been so many times and situations where we've ruled Pumas out in the same way, like on Sunday. But I know, I remember I was talking to, I know we got about 3 minutes here, but I was talking to Sebastian Salcedo from Pumas a month ago. And he highlighted how competitive Lilini is, how he puts trust in young players, and how he always talks about like the heart and passion for Pumas. And that's definitely something that you know, kind of stuck my mind, is that like you see that heart and passion like on the field from these Pumas sides like week in and week out. And I don't know, I feel like you still can't rule them out, but I'm gonna say that Seattle win it. But Amy, sorry, like I was rambling there for a bit. And any other final thoughts before we we wrap this up. Actually, it was interesting because we did two different recordings. I have no idea how long we've been recording.
Me neither.
it's probably over an hour now, but anyway, maybe. We got like 2 minutes.
Welcome to our first 2-hour podcast, everybody. I just want to say, totally off topic of anything we talked about today, congratulations to Licha Cervantes, who becomes the first
Campeonato.
Yeah. I don't know how to say that in English, even though my mind is, but like two times in a row, she has been the top goal scorer in the Liga MX Femenil.
And by the way, Chivas Femenil will also play Pumas Femenil. Pumas. So we've got that game on both leagues.
Yeah. So
just saying.
Yep.
I guess I'd be back-to-back champion, right? That's how we.
Yeah. She's like the back-to-back golden boot winner. There we go. That's the best way to say it. She's the back-to-back golden boot winner, which is amazing. She is I think negating maybe 3 or 4 games this calendar year, she has scored a goal in almost every match for club and country. Very impressive.
It's almost like weird, because like whenever I check in on a game, we have a minute left. I'm always just like I kind of just expect her to score, and it's weird. Yes. I feel like it's almost ridiculous to like some to reach that level. It's just like, well, she's probably going to score today, right? Oh yeah, she did score. Cool. Yeah, that's about right. So, but anywho, we got about a minute left here. I guess I should actually just wrap this up. That way this doesn't get lost. So thank you, Adriana. Thank you, Amy. Lots to keep an eye on. Obviously, we got Liga MX Femenil. We got the CONCACAF champions. We didn't get a chance to talk about the Mexicans abroad. But I guess I can mention it really quickly. Eric Gutierrez, he plays a central defender over the weekend, and he was given the Man of the Match award. Chucky Lozano got a goal over the weekend. Marcelo Flores scored for Arsenal's U23 squad. I think that's about it.
So keep up with the hashtags.
Bye. Pokemon Snap.